Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
All right, let's start with last night's game. Packers 10, Bears 3, everybody else 0. That sucked. I mean, I hate to say it, but it did. And you know the deal. Saying that something sucks is not a take. But that game last night, that game was not good. That game sucked. We didn't all wait 7 months for a punt, pass, and kick competition without the passes or the kicks. That was just a punt, punt, punt competition. I mean, you thought you tuned in to see Aaron Rodgers and Mitchell Trubisky? Nope. What you got was J.K. Scott and Pat O'Donnell. Now, credit where credit's due. Those dudes can punt now. O'Donnell was letting it rip for the Bears. 8 punts, 341 yards, an average of 42.6 yards per kick, 3 inside the 20, along a 53. Are you kidding me about that guy? Any other night, and he is getting the much-coveted Jim Rome Punter of the Night Award. Except not last night. Got a big shout-out to J.K. Scott. That 6'6" monster put on a punting clinic. Did you check this cat's hamstring flexibility? His hip mobility? Because I know you saw his 9 punts for 428 yards, an average of 47.6 per kick, including along a 63. 5 dimes he dropped inside the 20. You do that, J.K. Scott, and I'm going to go full government on you. John Kimball Scott. And that's got to be a jungle first. Full government for a punter. I haven't seen a Kimball go that nuts on Chicago since Harrison Ford was screaming about falsified medical research in The Fugitive.
Devlin McGregor could give you Provasic.
And truth be told, for most of that game, I would have much rather have been watching Harrison Ford in an early 90s film. Or better yet, Harrison Ford piloting a plane.
Get off my plane.
Or Harrison Ford trying to land a plane. Anywhere, at the airport, on the freeway, on the roof of this building, Penmar Golf Course. What I'm saying is that game was ugly. That did not look like a season opening game between a couple of Super Bowl contenders. That looked like a game between two teams that had never played football before. Now, in fairness, a lot of that did have to do with the two defenses. Now, we knew about the Bears' defense. Everybody knew how good they were last year. And then in the first quarter, they picked up right where they left off last year. They were swarming Aaron Rodgers, and Khalil Mack once again looked unblockable. The question about Chicago's defense had been, how much was it going to miss Vic Fangio? If Jerry Jones would have been involved, he would have been saying, Vic who? Vic who? Jarrah would have been like, that Bears' defense just circumcised a mosquito.
Circumcising the mosquito.
Chicago's defense was a known fact. We knew this. The Chicago defense was a known fact. The Packers defense, not so much. In fact, that was a question mark. Yes, they upgraded it big time on paper. And yes, they threw some crazy jack at it in the offseason. But you never know until you're on the field. And now, after 60 minutes of watching that Packer defense on the field, now we know. Most of all, Aaron Rodgers knows. And Rodgers could not wait to let everybody else know about it right after the game.
I'll say it again. We got a defense.
And in case you missed it, he reminded you at the end of the interview. Quote,
I'll say it again.
We got a defense. We got a defense. Then he met with the media afterwards. Quote, what we did on defense, I think we showed the league and folks watching that we're not just an offensive football team anymore. We've got a defense. And the guy literally would not stop talking about the defense.
Yeah, that was fun to watch. I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen a performance like that. Obviously, a lot of credit to Mike Patton and his staff. But to those players, I mean, just incredible effort.
You think he's hyped on Patton and that crew? Did you see that shove that he gave Patton when the game was over? I mean, that was a lot of excitement and a lot of energy. And a lot of hype in that shove. He was pumped, and he should be. Hey, listen, on that point, let me address some of you dopes who seem to think that all that love that he was giving to Patton was actually nothing more than a passive, aggressive dig on his head coach, Matt LaFleur. It's a moronic take. It's a garbage take.
Garbage!
Rodgers was not hyping Pettine to crack LaFleur. He was hyping Pettine because that defense just won them a critical divisional matchup on the road when the offense really couldn't get much going at all. Rodgers knows it. He was hyping Pettine because he knows that this has the potential to be one of the best defenses he's had since he's been there. He knows that defense looked great last night, and it's still going to get even better. He's hyping Pettine because he knows when the offense catches up to the defense, that that is a legitimate Super Bowl caliber team right there. That's why he's hyping Pettine, not because he's taking a not-so-veiled shot at LaFleur. Again, when was the last time Rodgers and the Packers had a defense like this? A defense that wreaks havoc. A defense that causes this many problems for an opponent who won 12 games and the division last year. Because last night, that Packer D turned Mitchell Trubisky inside out. And speaking of which, more on Trubisky later on. Because this dude apparently, it's a small sample size and it's only one game. But watching last night's game, if I didn't know any better, this dude's getting worse, not better. And the Bears offense is going to get their own take. He's going to get his own take. This take is focused on the Packer defense. A defense that held Chicago to 3 points. A defense that had 5 sacks. A defense that forced 8 punts. Rookie Darnell Savage lived up to his name. The Smiths, Za'Darius and Preston were everywhere, combining for 9 quarterback pressures and 2.5 sacks. And they had this monster play from former Bear Adrian Amos to ice it.
Running back is Montgomery. 16-yard line of Green Bay. Chicago third down and 10. Shotgun snap. Here's an arching spiral pass into the corner of the end zone. Intercepted! It's intercepted by Amos, the former Chicago Bear! Adrian Amos coming through, makes the interception in the back of the end zone of Trubisky.
Westwood One Radio, and as I tweeted last night, Mitch gonna Mitch. Bear is going to bear. And if it looked like Amos knew what was coming, it's because he did. Tramone Williams told Stacey Dales after the game they knew exactly what was going to happen.
Okay, so they ran the play earlier on the drive. Also, same thing. Adrian said they ran a 7 route. I said I felt it. I didn't quite see it, but I felt it. I don't know if that makes sense. And he said they're going to come back to it. I was like, okay, I said I'll be there. Nonetheless, they came back to it. I saw him running the 7 route. I turned right into him. And I couldn't see Amos because he was behind me, but he made a heck of a play.
And then what'd you say after to each other?
I don't even know what I said. I ain't gonna lie to you. I don't know what I said.
Yeah, man, it's funny, right? Really funny when you go into the enemy's house and you play a D like that. Yeah, I know it's only one game, but in that one game, that defense looked dominant. And it says right here, that defense, you've got some new pieces. Defense coordinator, I'm telling you, they're going to get better. That defense was dominant last night, and it's only going to get better. And yes, Green Bay's offense is still a work in progress. But it would appear that after only one game, we all wasted a hell of a lot of time and a hell of a lot of energy speculating on the relationship between Rodgers and LaFleur. Because those two look just fine. Even though the offense struggled, I didn't see either one of them freaking out on the other guy when things didn't work out. Hard to get a read on it in one game against an elite defense like Chicago's, but it also says here they're going to find their rhythm. And when they do, the team is going to be good. Also on Twitter last night, I said that Aaron Rodgers, his preseason was in the first quarter. They'll find their rhythm. They'll get better. And then once that offense does catch up with that defense, we're going to be talking about the Packers being on the short list of teams that have a legitimate chance to win it all. A legitimate chance. I'm speaking of Dr. David Chow. Doc, it's good to have you on the show. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. Thanks for having me on. It's good. Long-time listener, big fan.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Doc. Thanks so much. Good to have you on, too. So there are a number of players and injuries that I want to get into with you. But before we do so, just start with the injury report. It's something we hear about every single week from every single team. But what exactly is the injury report, and how important is that information that teams put in that report?
Well, the injury report is something that by rule teams have to do, and they only have to do for the regular season. It's every Wednesday, and then the final game report comes out on Friday, And they're supposed to be honest with it, and they are, but there's a lot of leeway. For example, questionable status means that anywhere from 50-50 to 90% playing to 90% not playing can be called questionable. So there's a lot of leeway, and all teams have to do is indicate a body part, knee. They don't have to say what knee. They don't have to say what's injured. If it's a quarterback shoulder, then they have to say throwing shoulder or not. But it's very general. It's not at all specific.
So if you found $100 on the street, would you pick it up or would you just keep walking? Of course, you take the money. So that said, why do you keep picking winners without betting on them? This is why I go to MyBookie, because it's fast, it's easy, and they pay you when you win. Let's face it, where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on. Look, I would not be telling you all to bet with them if they were not the best. They are. So do the smart thing. If you're going to bet football this season, bet with MyBookie. Did you know that you could bet on games after kickoff? If by the second half, it looks like your bet's going to lose, you can always take the other side. Sometimes chasing does work. I do it. I've gotten paid that way. Or if you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you multiply your winnings. And no matter how you bet, the NFL season is the best time of year. Join now and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use the promo code ROME and activate this great offer. Promo code ROME. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. We're talking to the pro football doc, Dr. David Chow. All right, so as an example, the Packers included 20 players on their injury report this week, and some people got really worried and worked up when they saw that. What was your reaction when you saw it? Was there any reason to panic?
Well, I looked at it and went through all the injuries because we had already issued at the profootballdoc.com an injury index where we ranked the Packers' injury health against the Bears for this past for this Thursday. And we even break down the Packers' run offense against the Bears' run defense. We're that granular. And both teams were relatively healthy from my perspective. Trey Burton on one side and Oren Burks on the other as the really only injury. So that's why I tweeted out and updated the website to say, don't worry about the 20 players. They were cheating. They weren't lying. Yes, a lot of people have little issues, and they just happen to list them all. And we actually even keep track throughout the year which teams, you know, how teams list things. For example, last year there was one team that 96% of their questionable players played and one team that only 29% of their questionable players played. So each team has a different style, and we'll learn Matt LaFleur's over time. And that's why the whole injury index and what we do at the website and on Twitter exists.
All right, so I can see where this injury or this information might be interesting to people who are watching or playing these games or have some other kind of interest. You mentioned the injury index. What exactly is your injury index?
The injury index is how injured a team is against the norm for the week. In other words, the lines and expectations are out there publicly, but what's not known about the injuries and how it might affect someone's performance in DFS, fantasy, or in states that where gambling is legal. So what I do is look at, you know, let's say, take, for example, the Patriots. They traditionally will put 10 players on as questionable, and they do the hide the bacon game, which is not illegal. And there's one of those players who isn't going to play. But is that one player Sony Michel or is it somebody else? And we try and decipher that. And we also break it down for the Patriots' run defense against the other team's run offense. For example, in the Chargers' playoff game against the Patriots, Melvin Gordon wasn't even listed on the injury report. But we were saying, look, he's not going to do very well. He had a second MCL sprain on the other knee. And you can't play NFL running back with two knee braces on effectively. And indeed, he had 9 carries for 15 yards in that game, and the Chargers were defeated by the Patriots. So we try and break down this information. Look, not every game is there actionable information related to injuries, but it does happen often enough.
Dr. David Chow was the Chargers team doctor for more than 17 years. You can follow him on Twitter at ProFootballDoc. All right, so Doc, what about, for example, Ezekiel Elliott? He said that he's been working out. His camp has said that he would be, quote, in game shape when he showed up. In your experience, how likely is that? I mean, can you be in game shape without actually participating in training camp?
Well, I think you can be in great shape, but it's very hard to mimic football. look, you can practice all you want doing a radio show live, but until you do one, Rome, right, it's not, you're not experienced in it and you're not used to it and you're not in the groove. And for football, it's the same thing. Like, you can practice all you want in Cabo, and Marshall Faulk obviously did a great job getting him ready, and all reports are that he's in great shape. But there's still the acclimation to football, not just taking hits, but there's a higher chance early season of even things like cramps, like we saw in the game last night, or hamstring injuries or calf strains or quad strains. And if the Cowboys put him out there for 75 plays and give him 20-plus touches, he's going to be at higher risk for a muscle injury because it's early season like this. So I don't think that's going to happen. And we talk about that on the injury index and at the website. I'm expecting, you know, maybe 25 plays. Look, there's quotes today that he will be available, completely available. Available doesn't mean usage. Now, if he is used for the whole game, there's just a high, it's not a guarantee he's going to get hurt, but there's a higher risk that he's going to get hurt. So I expect him to be gradually incorporated into the offense over the first week or two.
Dr. David Chow is the creator of ProFootballDoc.com. You can get information like this on that site. So what do you make about Odell Beckham Jr.? Now, he said yesterday that his hip injury is, quote, something that hinders me from fully sprinting as fast as I can, end quote. But he added, Doc, that when the adrenaline kicks in, he can't feel anything, so he plans to play against the Titans. When you hear that, what is your reaction?
Well, I don't doubt that he's going to play, and of course he's a great player, and he's going to play for sure. He might be a little bit less than great. Some of the route tree might not be there for him, because flipping your hips and opening up and so forth is a big part of at least half of the route tree in really being effective and getting off the line of scrimmage and getting open. He's still going to get his targets. He's a great player. He's going to play. I do chuckle a little bit on the Twitter world where people send video of them. Oh, look, he's working out. Look, his hips look fine. He's going three-quarter speed in a warm-up drill. That's not game conditions, and that's what we look at. He's going to play. He's going to be effective, but he might be a notch less than what he normally is. So we'll have to see what's happening there, because hips are very important for a wide receiver like him.
I was going to say, so when you're dealing with wide receivers and you're talking about their hips and you're talking about leg muscles, especially as it relates to that stop-start nature of the position and how these guys have to explode, how careful then does a team have to be to make sure that something small does not turn into something much?
Well, of course, the trainers and the doctors are going to counsel him and be careful with the team on what he does. Heck, they may even alter the routes that he runs through the game to let him run the routes that he's more able to run with his hip issue. Without knowing his exact hip issue, is it a labrum issue, is it a muscle, is it a groin, or whatever it is, it's hard for me to say exactly from the outside. So I try and relate what I know, but I also am careful to not say too much and pretend I know when I don't. I call it insider knowledge, not insider information.
You can follow him at Pro Football Doc. So, Doc, the last couple of weeks, the retirement of Andrew Luck has been a really big talking point. Again, you were a team doctor for the Chargers for 17 years. As a doctor who's been around the game a long, long time, what did you make of his retirement and what he said about the psychological toll that those injuries took on him?
The mental side of injury is a big part of it, and that's part of the medical staff's job, is to help cope with that. This is not a criticism of the Colts at all. It's just a big deal here. Look at the mental side of, let's say, Jimmy Garoppolo as he returns from his ACL. Look, he was 0-for-6 with an interception in that first preseason game because he was a little skittish. He didn't want to step into throws. He's worried about his lead leg and the trash around it because he's coming back from the ACL tear. That's a part of the mental aspect of the game. Andrew Luck has been through a lot. And, you know, the most interesting thing about Andrew Luck's retirement, besides the surprise, which everyone was, but if you really look back at it, hindsight is 2020, he kind of told us that this was an option. I mean, what did he say, using his words? I vow not to do this again like I did on my shoulder. I'm not going to play through injury. I'm going to do things the right way. I'm not going to play hurt. You know, I'm going to rehab the right way and respect the process. I'm not going to let this happen again. Well, here was an ankle/calf injury that was 5.5 months old. They're still seeing specialists and getting a diagnosis. It's moving around. It was very clear week one he was not going to be 100%. And probably not week 2, 3, 4, or 5. So instead of hanging on and going against what he vowed, he was a man of his word. So I have to respect that. And if you look back at his comments and pair up with his decisions right now, he actually is being very consistent and has told us all along how he feels about it.
All right, so for people who want more information, if they go to profootballdoc.com, what kind of information are they going to find there? And then if they want to follow along with you this weekend, the first weekend of the NFL action this season, what kind of an experience can you provide for them? What are they going to get?
Well, they're going to get subscriber updates, which is real-time information and higher-level analysis, higher than the Twitter handle. They're going to get special videos, including a two-minute warning chat to look at first-half injuries in every game to see if there's something actionable for the second-half lines. And there may be, there may not be. So there'll be those chats on there. There'll be explanations about what the injury index is. The injury index, for example, this week, talking about Andrew Luck and the Colts, they play the Chargers. The common opinion is that the Colts are more injured because they don't have Andrew Luck. But look at this way. The Colts returned 21 of their 22 starters. Luck is the only one not coming back. And Jacoby Brissett, unlike this first stint starting with the Colts, has had 6 months as the number one quarterback, not 6 days like he did last time and didn't fare as well. So he may be better prepared. On the other side of the ball, it's actually the Chargers that are more injured. They're coming into the game with Derwin James, probably the best safety in the league, out for a long time. They're coming into the game without their only bona fide Pro Bowl lineman, left tackle, who's out, Russell Okung, with the pulmonary embolism, and he was supposed to protect Phillip Rivers, an immobile quarterback's blind side. In addition, they have several linebackers still out injured. The injury index will show you the Chargers are much more banged up than the Colts are, even though everyone is focused on the injury of Andrew Luck.
Are you craving some protein after a good workout? Of course you are. Don't make a shake. Don't eat a bar. Grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty. It's tender. It's made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a wood fire. And it goes wherever you go, to the game, to the gym, to the beach. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. Clones, if you don't happen to see it, just ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? So, is Antonio Brown going to play? After everything he's gone through, everything he's done, everything he's said, and then on top of that, he threatens to punch Mike Mayock, and again, apparently called him some names, which I'm not going to get into because that's not the thing. The names are not the thing. The name calling is not the thing. Him threatening to punch the GM and being held back by a teammate is the thing. And then there were the initial reports that they were planning on suspending him and all the breathless Twitter speculation about whether or not he played his last down with the Raiders, or even better, his last down in the NFL. Not only has he not played his last down with the Raiders, not only has he not played his last down with the in the NFL, according to John Gruden, he's going to play this week.
Prepared statement. I'll just say Antonio's back today. We're really excited about that. Ready to move on. He's had a lot of, obviously, time to think about things, and we're happy to have him back. And I know Raider Nation is excited about that, too. All right?
All right, guys. Thank you very much.
Monday night?
That's the plan. That's the plan. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
That's the plan. That's the plan. So the guy threatened to punch the GM because the GM questioned why the guy would take to Instagram with a letter regarding his fines, threatens to punch him, teammate holds him back, and Gruden's all about it. Gruden endorses it. Endorses it, is enabling it, is fine with it. I know we don't want Khalil Mack around here, but Antonio Brown, this guy can do whatever the hell he wants. And again, he is the most powerful guy in the organization, Antonio Brown. This guy can literally do what he wants, when he wants, to whoever he wants. What's next? Is he going to threaten to knock Gruden out? Is he going to threaten to punch Gruden in the face? Gruden will just be like, you know, he's a good guy. It's good to have him back. And I know Raider Nation's glad to have him back. Is he going to play this week, coach? Yep, that's the plan. mean, why wouldn't he? Why do you think Antonio Brown does all this stuff? Because he can. Because he can. Acted crazy in Pittsburgh, forced his way out of Pittsburgh, and what were the consequences? None. He got exactly what he wanted. A new contract, guaranteed money. Got to Oakland, started pulling a bunch of crazy nonsense again. What were the consequences? None. He gets to roll right in and play. Jamie Gillen is my guest. Jamie, it's great to have you on. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. How are you doing?
Good, good, man. So you've got this amazing backstory. You've got this incredible haircut. You've got an amazing nickname. But bigger than all of that is your journey to this point, which I want to get to in a moment. But I got to ask first, what's it like a few days away from your first NFL game? Does it feel kind of surreal to you, or does it feel completely normal?
To be honest, it just feels totally normal. I'm just treating it business as usual. You know, going to go out there and do our job as a special teams unit and go and play well and do exactly what Mr. Prefer asks of me and what the special teams unit needs. So, it's a game I'm going into. It can't be all crazy in my mind, you know. I just got to stay focused and have fun at the end of the day, too, because I'm playing football, you know.
I do know. Jamie Gillen joining us. I'm going to ask you about Mr. Prefer in a minute. Now, you grew up in Scotland and you got hooked on rugby at a very early age. What position did you play, and what was it about rugby that made you fall in love with that game?
The position I played was fly half. It's called fly half or standoff, and it's basically the quarterback on the rugby field. You decide the offensive plays and you decide the defensive plays, and you kind of control the game when you've got the ball in your hand. What made me fall in love with it, I mean, my dad has been playing rugby for years. He's 47, still plays rugby, and when I was a kid, my mom used to put me in the pram and I'd be watching the game when I was just a little man, you know. So as soon as I turned of age to play, I was already out there, you know, running around in the dirt and stuff playing rugby. So when I was five, that was when I was first started practicing rugby. And then in Scotland, you can start, well, when I played, we started doing contact at like 7, 8 years old. So I loved hitting people and I loved running with the ball, and it's just a kind of mentality that I really enjoyed having, just being in that game and being around the teammates and stuff. The rugby guys are just kind of a different breed of people, and everybody who plays rugby will know it. It's just a very tight group of guys, and you kind of go to war every Saturday, and then you end up after that having a couple of pints with the other team like nothing had happened. So it's pretty good.
Jamie Gillen joining us. That is awesome. All right, so like when you mentioned the rugby guys are kind of a different breed, it's kind of a different culture. Like, how are the rugby guys different from the NFL guys?
That's tough, actually. Well, because, you know, and what I've noticed in college locker rooms and stuff is that, you know, there's so many positions. You know, you've got the DBs, quarterbacks, and everybody, you know, everybody's a team, and everybody is obviously super nice to each other, and it's awesome. But, you know, you kind of have more cliques, you know what I'm saying, because there's a much more of us. But in rugby, there's maybe a 15 men in the field. You normally have a 22-man squad at most. I mean, what we have is like a 25-man squad, and everybody is just completely together. That's one big group. If you guys are going out that night, there'll be 15 people in that pub, you know, as a unit having a good time. So just a lot, much more of a, just every player together for going out and having a good time, and or just as a team thing, you know, instead of having more cliques of groups and stuff. So that's one of the main things I noticed.
No, I get it. That makes sense to me. Now, I love the fact that your father is still playing the game at 46, 47. Now, your father was in the Air Force, and when you were in high school, work took him to Maryland. So what was that transition like for you from a personal and sports standpoint?
It was tough because I was in boarding school at the time. I was on a full sports scholarship, and it was the most prestigious rugby school in Scotland, and we'd just come off of winning the Scottish National Championship for boarding school rugby, which is a big deal back home. And it was really tough having to leave that because I was getting a great education. I got good grades, and we had a stellar rugby team. So it was really hard to leave that, but when I was down in London, when my dad was stationed in London, I used to have to go to work with him to study for my exams on my holiday time. And I remember just seeing the difference in work that he had when he was air crew to just being at the headquarters in London. And I said to him, you should put yourself up for posting. He just didn't look as happy, in my opinion. And sure enough, I was at boarding school and get a phone call from my dad that he had an option to go out to America. And it sounded awesome. So I was like, Dad, we should take it. You know, I'm with the family. Let's go. And then we had the conversation. And I was in two minds. It was a really hard decision because I really wanted to stay. But I didn't want to have that relationship, cross-Atlantic relationship with my family and hardly ever see them. So, you know, I decided to come out of boarding school, attend school over here. And classes were so much different out here. The grading system was really different. So it was a really hard transition at first. And then also the fact that I wasn't playing rugby. I was playing rugby four times a week at school. And everybody spoke, especially boarding school, spoke eight. Slept, bred rugby. You know, we're a rugby school, and they come out here and people talking about American football, lacrosse, all these, you know, sports that I've never played before. And I barely got to play rugby. I only got to play like once a week, you know, up in north of Maryland. But then that's when the football thing kind of kicked into gear.
Jamie Gillen joining us, Browns punter. So what about that football thing? How did that kick into gear? What's the story behind that?
So I was originally playing soccer my senior year at Leonardtown High School, and I was just playing that to stay fit for rugby because we had rugby in the off season, and I had a couple of practices on Saturdays that I'd go to. So I was playing soccer. Halfway in the season, I saw that, you know, the kicking game wasn't too good for the school, and I remember one of my really close friends, Joey and Trent from another school that I'd attended, kept telling me, "Oh, you can get a full scholarship to college for kicking, and you could go to the NFL." And I didn't think anything of it because I just assumed receivers or someone else could just kick a ball. But then I discovered they actually do, you know, throw scholarships at punters and kickers. And so I went and talked to the head coach at the time, one of the coaches at the time, and he's one of my great friends right now, is Coach Woodburn. And he had said, I talked to him and said, you know, I saw you're not doing very well in the kicking thing. I can kick field goals. And so we went out and he watched me kick field goals, watched me kick off and punt. And this started happening this season. He said, you're on the team. So I did soccer and rugby and football at the same time and played five games, ended up then playing two All-Star games after that and then getting a bunch of, like, you know, scholarships and preferred walk-ons. And then the UAPB one came around really, really late in the game. So I took that.
So you end up at Arkansas Pine Bluff, and what an amazing experience that must have been. This is a HBCU. So what was that experience like for you, and what was it like to go to school and play ball there?
So, you know, I didn't know anything about it. The phone call was it was about 2 weeks before camp. Trent, one of my buddies, Trent, happened to see on Facebook that Arkansas Pine Bluff needs a new kicker. He put my highlight film in there. I got a phone call, funny enough, while I'm out with my buds having a good time. And I just get a phone call and it says, this University of Arkansas at Pine Bluff would like to offer you a full scholarship. And I just put the phone down, shouted to my friends. I was like, hey, full scholarship on the phone, should I take it? And they kind of looked at me like, well, what division? And I asked them, what division? He goes, Division One. And I told my friends, and they're like, take it. So I just took it. He's like, the coach goes, is that it? Like, he said, like, you don't want to ask anything else? Like, nah, I'm good. When do I need to be there?
Oh, man.
Ended up packing my bags and getting on there a couple of days later. And I didn't even look at the school. I didn't even look what they had for a major. I didn't even know what a historical black college meant. When I saw HBCU, I thought that was maybe like a local bank or something that sponsored it. I had no idea, you know? So I rocked up here and everybody's like, you know, this is a historical black school. And what does that mean? He goes, well, this is a predominantly, you know, black institution. It's like, I don't care. You know, I'm getting to play ball. And I got treated amazingly there. Everybody was, you know, I have loads of friends from that school and we had a really good time. Unfortunately, didn't win a lot of games, but I had a lot of good memories. And, you know, it gave me the opportunity. I got a free education. I got my degree and I'm now looking to play my first game in the NFL this weekend, so I think I ticked all the boxes.
Jamie Gillen is joining us. This story is even better than I thought. I mean, Jamie, I don't know what's more amazing, the fact that they call you and offer you a scholarship, and you say yes, and they said, do you want to ask us anything? And you said, nope, I'm coming. But am I clear about this? Did they offer you that scholarship because your friend posted video of you on Facebook?
Yeah, yeah. My friend Trent was going through the recruiting process, and he had friended a load of coaches on his Facebook page. And I'd originally committed to Bowie State. I technically signed with him on the national signing day to Bowie State on a full scholarship, but I mean, it was probably a little bit cheeky of me, but I didn't sign the papers and sent them over to them. And I guess, I don't know what happened. I guess it didn't check that I didn't sign it. And so I was technically still a free agent. You know what I'm saying? Coming out of high school, I was like, you know, just in case something else crazy comes up. And sure enough, my buddy was sitting in the working in the gym, Leonardtown Gym. He sees it comes up on his Facebook. He goes, oh, I know Jamie's got a full scholarship already, but, you know, who cares? I'll just throw his highlight tape in there. He threw it in there, and I got the phone call that night.
All right, so if that was the phone call, and that's an amazing story, the phone call with the scholarship offer, where were you when you received the phone call that you had made the Cleveland Browns?
Oh, so I was at the Flying Monkey, a local pub, and, you know, I find it pretty funny, but I mean, where else would you expect two Scottish people, ex-rugby player, current rugby player, to be on a Saturday afternoon, probably in the pub? So we're just having a good time, you know, watching the Buckeyes play, talking to some people. And I just didn't want to be in my room or just somewhere, you know, just twiddling my thumbs and being anxious about what's going to happen, because, like I said, I had no idea. But my dad came up with my dog Bear, big old German Shepherd. So we're just walking him around Tremont, having a good time. And then we just stopped in the pub and, you know, having a good time. And then I get the phone call, and it made that good time even better. So it was pretty funny.
So, Jamie, who were you trying to buy everybody else around, or were they trying to buy rounds for you in the Flying Monkey pub?
Well, you know, where I've been brought up and stuff, you know, if people buy you around, you're going to get them back. And we'd be buying beers and stuff. And as soon as I had a phone call, I was like, all right, you know, I'm going to get everybody a beer and stuff. And they're all, no, we're going to get you a beer. And I was like, no, I'm going to go and grab your beers. And they're all like, no, you sit down, we're going to get you a beer. Like, okay, I guess I'll get you guys next. And they refused for me to get them anything. I'm like, you guys watch, I'm going to be back here, and I'm gonna get you back one of these days.
Jamie, really, it's so great. Really quickly, when you show up at the Browns, they already had a really, really good punter in Britton Colquitt, one of the better punters in the NFL, entering his 10th season. How did you approach that? I mean, were you going there to compete and win that job? Or maybe were you going there just to kind of learn everything you possibly could and see where things ended up? What was your mindset going up against a guy like that?
It's a bit of both. I mean, I'm a very realistic guy. And when people ask, you know, oh, you got to go there and win the job. And that was my mindset. I came here to play for the Browns, but I understood that I'm going against a 10-year veteran who is an incredibly good punter, a very good holder, and just all around a really great guy. And I just came in here to also learn from the holding aspect, learn from his mindset, you know, because kicking at the Browns Stadium, from what I've heard, can get a little tricky sometimes. I just try and learn a lot from him, and we really got along well together. We had a lot of fun. We hung out. We, you know, chatted a lot, and we competed hard on the field. So my mindset was to play for the Browns, but I got to be realistic, because who knows what could happen. All I knew is I can control what I can control. So when I go out there in the field and I'm up to punt, I go and punt the best punt I can and just show them this is who I am, this is what I've got, you know, and just do me. And sure enough, so at the end of the four games, and people ask, are you nervous? Are you that? I was like, no, I wasn't nervous, because I gave it my best shot. I pulled on a Browns jersey for four games. I don't know a lot of Scottish people that have done that, or a lot of people in general. So I was really happy that I was even given the opportunity to do that. Thanks to, you know, Mr. Dorsey and Coach P for coming down and watching me punt. He came all the way to Arkansas Pine Bluff to watch me punt. You know, that's just crazy. So, you know, just doing all that stuff was just awesome. And then at the end of it, I just was see, just can sit there with a smile on my face saying I gave it my all. And if I make the team, it's just business. And we just keep getting better and we go and win some games.
Man, what a great conversation. You've been so good with your time. Last thought, since you mentioned that there aren't too many Scottish people that have pulled on a Browns jersey four times, how about that nickname, the Scottish Hammer? Now, from where I'm sitting, it's one of the great nicknames ever. How do you feel about it?
Oh, I think it's awesome. I mean, if people like it, want to run with it, you know, I'm all for it. You know, I'm a very go the flow, easy going guy. So, you know, if y'all love it, I love it too. So we'll just go with it.
There you go. 2-time first team all conference player at Arkansas Pine Bluff with one of the all time great backstories, great nickname, and he can boom it now. You've got the Browns at Tennessee on Sunday. Jamie Gillen, my guest. Jamie, you just crushed that. That was such a fun conversation. Thank you so much. Have fun with it. I know you will, and it's great to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you too.
So I want to pose a question which I already know the answer to. Those are the best questions, right? Ever wonder where your family comes from? I have the answer. Of course you do. We all do. Well, you can discover more about them and learn about your story by combining the Ancestry DNA test with billions of historical family records. I absolutely love this product. Ancestry DNA gives you so much more than just the places you're from. Ancestry connects you to the places in the world where your story started, and they do so by using precise geographic detail and clear-cut historical insights. As an example, you can even trace your ancestors' journeys over time. You can follow how and why your family moved from place to place. Ancestry's unique features and record collections can give a more complete picture of people from your past, like the events that shaped them, how they made a living, even how long they attended a school. It's that in-depth, it's that fascinating, and it's this easy to get started. Simply go to Ancestry.com/podcast right now and save 20% off your Ancestry DNA kit. Once again, Ancestry.com/podcast and take 20% off your Ancestry DNA kit. Ancestry.com/podcast. I do have time for Alvin's 4 days that were. Alvy, roll it. Oh, yeah. What's cracking? Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. It is good to be with you. I did take a few days. We had a long holiday weekend, and I had taken last Friday off to go to Wisconsin to help move our son into college. So now I'm back, and it feels great.
Oh, my God.
Coming off the first weekend of college football, did you see Jalen Hurts?
Did you see
him? Wants to throw, does across the middle, Rambo. 15, 10, 5, touchdown.
I'm not saying give Hurts the Heisman. I'm not saying that. I'm saying give it to his coach.
Slips away, touchdown. Beautiful run.
There weren't any fluky plays. They were 26-point underdogs. Rocky Top might be Rocky Bottom for a week or two until they win one. Georgia State head football coach Sean Elliott joining us after a huge win. And quarterback Dan Ellington said of you, quote, he's not going to blow smoke up your butt.
That speaks volumes. We all have a great relationship.
Email. Losing to Georgia State so we can finally get back to Tennessee's favorite pastime, sister wrestling. A good one, Matt. That's pretty funny. You're not helping him. You're hurting him, Alvin. He is Therese Paylor.
Jim, thanks for the vine, man. I grew up listening to you as a teenager in Detroit. You're actually one of the reasons I decided to get into sports media, man. So it's an honor to be in the jungle. Pumped to be here.
Got Freeze and his hospital bed into a booth in the press box.
I had a hard time kind of finding the clocks, too.
Do you need to see the clock as a head coach? Is that important? What's with the shoes in the hospital bed? Excuse me, can you draw that curtain? If you win that game, do you get doused with sugar-free Jell-O? We're talking to Hall of Famer John Smoltz.
Hey, John.
In terms of the Red Sox,
I just don't think they have the pitching right now. Even if they were, you know, struggling but healthy.
I couldn't care less about the team struggling.
David in Milwaukee.
Hey, man, I'm a free man. You got me through a prison bit. You got me through some deaths in my family. A lot of stuff, man. Your takes on Brett Favre. Man, I rocked with you the whole prison bit.
How long have you been out?
I've been out 4 years. I did 23, man. I went in at 16. I came out at 39.
You committed a crime or crimes that bought you 2 dimes and 3 in state prison? It means you hurt some innocent people, David. Bad. Real bad.
How you judged me yesterday, if that's how you did your job, are you one of them people that sent somebody to prison that was not guilty?
I don't know if Ezekiel Elliott got all the money he wanted, but Jerry Jones got exactly what he wanted. Us to look at him.
What do you mean?
And he's going to run it all back when he gets around to doing Dak's deal.
How about them
Cowboys? Drizzle in Wichita.
While they in their cubicles flicking their boogers after picking them, Zeke about to over 2K and a splash waterfall all the way to the Super Bowl.
Hey, Drizzle, don't be a stranger to the show when the Giants
pizzle and shizzle all over the Dallas Star.
Terrell Davis.
As a former running back, I think that is a great, great sign for future running backs, and the position can no longer be said to be devalued.
We're joined by DeMarcus Ware.
Man, listen, with that introduction, and especially that hype music, that's what we used to come out of the tunnel with the Dallas Cowboys, so I feel like it's game time. So what's up?
Brian Harsin is my guest.
We talk about once a Bronco, always a Bronco. They've got coffee. Hey, appreciate you, and go Broncos.
TD, D. Ware, in Boise State. Do I feel a Bronco streak?
Hey, John.
John Elway tomorrow.
Time to meet Mr. Rome.
Giddy up, horse face. That really happened on the show once. Clowns, you tell me, who deserves to be paid more, Jared Goff or Dak Prescott? Is Goff a franchise quarterback? I say
Frank
he is.
Joining
call
us.
My Ram hotline.
Hey. To other people, you know, who just a normal person, man. And I just feel like, you know, you just treat everybody the same, man. You know, no matter who they is or what they do.
Head coach David Shaw.
We are the modern day gladiators. We are their entertainment. We are not regular people, right? They're thinking about the arena. They're not thinking about the human being. So for me, I kind of give them a pass. I try not to give them my emotions and get angry at somebody who truly doesn't understand.
Full government for a punter. I haven't seen a Kimball go that nuts on Chicago since Harrison Ford was screaming about falsified medical research. In The Fugitive.
Devlin McGregor could give you Provacid.
Twitter.
Dasmati, you could sit here on the Jim Rome radio program, or you can go door to door in Monterey Park with the 2020 census.
I was born with the name Drizzle. You ain't like it? Tough nugget.
Dr. David.
Oh, sorry, Jim.
Chow.
He's going three-quarter speed in a warm-up drill. That's not game condition.
Jamie Gillen.
When I saw HBCU, I thought that was maybe like a local bank or something that sponsored it. I had no idea, you know? So everybody's like, you know, this is a historical black school. And what does that mean? He goes, well, this is a predominantly black institution. It's like, I don't care. I'm getting to play ball.
Twitter.
We are also playing Monday night. But that's only because Mondays are our designated days, you know? Regards the Monday wives of polygamists?
The race is closer.
The missionary position.
Hey, the Rome is burning, baby.
Burning. Z going for 2K in a highway.
Quote, a pond of piss. And
chase ambulances.
You got it. Thanks, Rome.
So I'm a Rome fan.
I'll make a quick switch to the Arkansas-Portland State game.
You blew it!
But that's it for today.
Good night now!
The 4 days that were edited, produced, directed by Alvin DeLauro. Christian Walker. Christian, good to have you on. How are you?
I'm great, Jim. How you doing, man?
Good, good. Good to visit. All right, so you're coming off a sweep of the Padres, and as a team, you've won 9 of your last 10. You're right in the middle of that wild card race. How good does it feel to be going to the park and playing meaningful games every night in September?
Yeah, it's exciting. I mean, this is what it's all about. It's a long, long season, you know, to give ourselves a chance here in the last month. Finally, I feel like the team's coming together and playing as we've expected to play all year, and it's exciting, man. It's motivating, and I think we're right where we want to be.
You know, and understand this also as a team, you guys were one game under 500 at the end of July, but you've completely turned it around since then. What has been the biggest change over the past 5 or 6 weeks?
I think, to be honest, I think Torrey and the people in charge are doing a great job of letting us play our game, keeping the pressure off of us, and, you know, it's about going out and winning at this point. There's nothing really else to do. Paying attention to the standings and what the other teams are doing is all good, and it's good to be aware of it. But at the same time, you know, it's about going out and winning at this point. And I feel like that's what we're all pushing towards.
Christian Walker is joining us. You know, when the team traded Zach Greinke to Houston at the deadline, it seems to me it might have been pretty easy for guys in the clubhouse to pack it in either consciously or maybe unconsciously and give up on the season. But nobody's done that. And what's it say about the guys on this team that they just kept battling and grinding?
Yeah, it's definitely a credit to the makeup and then the leadership. The people in charge is, you know, guys like Nick Ahmed and Archie Bradley and things like that, where it's win or, you know, it's win or bust. So to be honest, it doesn't matter, you know, who's being traded or who's being acquired. It's about the nine guys and the 25 that are on the team that night going out and going to battle with each other. So, I mean, it's you're obviously aware of it and, you know, the trade deadline is an important time of the year and a lot of big moves happen. But moving forward after that, you know, everybody's just done a really good job of keeping our heads on straight and keeping us, you know, aiming at one common goal.
Diamondbacks first baseman Christian Walker is my guest. You know, your situation, honestly, to me is so interesting because if we were to go back a little bit, you were putting up big numbers in the minors, but of course, Paul Goldschmidt was playing first base for the Diamondbacks. If there was anyone else playing first base, you probably would have been at the majors at that point, which was something you had experienced in a couple of other organizations as well. It seems like it would be pretty easy to get pretty frustrated. Did you get frustrated, or if not, how were you able to manage that frustration and cope with it?
Yeah, frustration, I mean, that's for lack of a better word, yeah, it's definitely an emotion that you're feeling at a time like that. But to be honest, it's not a frustration like, oh, you know, I think I'm better than Paul, so I deserve to be playing. It's just a frustration that I feel like, you know, all the hard work that I've been putting in is finally shown and finally coming out, and I'm showing that I'm the hitter that I want to be and the hitter that I know I could always have been. And then just to understand the business side of it at the same point and know that, you know, there's somebody who has earned it and improved himself time and time again ahead of you. And, you know, it's almost motivating. At the same time, it was like, how can I still learn from this and still continue to get better? And I felt like I flipped the script and instead I got a chance to learn from a guy like Paul Goldschmidt. And I got to take ground balls next to him and hit in the cage next to him and ask him questions and see just a certain amount of professionalism that he brings to the ballpark every day. And, you know, it's no secret what kind of teammate and what kind of player he is. So having the opportunity to learn firsthand from him was a great experience.
I mean, still not an easy mindset or perspective to have, but certainly you're able to develop that and work through it. And then there's like a mental toughness and a physical toughness. As an example, let me share this story. Chad Holbrook, who recruited you to South Carolina, tells this great story from the 2011 College World Series. He said, quote, in the semifinal game, he got hit in the hand by a pitch. He broke a bone. The doctors told him there was no way he could play in the championship game and swing the bat. Christian insisted he could find a way, so he went out there. He got three hits. We beat Florida for the championship. I've never seen anything like that, quote, end of quote. It's an amazing story. What do you remember about that game?
Yeah, that was an important time in my baseball career for me. Just feeling the power of what a team could do. And I had a lot of guys, seniors, come up and tell me how much I meant to the team and that they wanted me out there. And you know, even if I wasn't 100%, and you know, the camaraderie and the energy that everybody around you know, brought to the ballpark, and definitely helped me get through it. Along with, you know, the medical staff at USC and all that was obviously a huge part of it. But you know, once I found out that I couldn't hurt it any worse, it was just a matter of dealing with the pain. You know, I knew that I had a responsibility to my team to do everything I could to be on the field for them those last few games. And you know, a lot of adrenaline, obviously, with the championship series, but I would say for me, that was, you know, doing it for my teammates and my teammates also doing it for me was a huge part of that.
I got to think, and who am I to say, but even performing at the level you are right now, having the success you're having right now, I've got to think that moment, that experience, to play through that, to grind through that, to win a College World Series, that's got to be one of the highlights of your entire career and life, and always will be, right?
Yeah, no doubt. My time at Carolina was so special. Two College World Series, runner-up the third year. I felt like I was just brought up in a win, who cares, just win anyway environment. And, you know, that's so important for me, and that's a huge part of the competition and the energy that I try to bring to the ballpark every day.
You know, it seems like the approach to hitting has changed in so many different ways. Like one of your teammates, Jake Lamb, has said the two of you can talk about the ideal movement of the back hip for an hour. So in your mind, Christian, how much of hitting is an art and how much of it is a science?
Oh, man, I think it's a perfect blend of both. It's so difficult. It's such a hard thing to do. And for me, that's part of the you know, part of the intrigue to it and part of what makes it so fun when you do some things right is how difficult it is and understanding that. But, you know, one of my pet peeves is when people say, oh, hitting's simple. And to me, it's not. It may seem simple. You're swinging a bat at the baseball, but at the end of the day, there's so many little moves and little thoughts and ideas and how you approached the day and the work you've done up until you're at bat all have a say and all have a determination in how the results turn out that day. So, I mean, Lamb nailed it. We've sat on planes and on buses and talked hitting and bounced videos off each other. And, I mean, it could go on for days. And I mean, for me, that's what's exciting about it. I feel like there's no end game. You're never a complete hitter. There's always room to learn, always room to grow. And for me, that's really exciting.
Finally, this conversation would certainly illustrate this. I've heard a lot of guys around the game say a lot of positive things about you, but I want to repeat a quote from Buck Showalter. Buck Showalter said, quote, he was the ultimate baseball player. I mean, Christian, that's an amazing thing coming from a guy like that. I've talked to Buck over the years a number of times. He does not say things like that very often. What's it mean to earn that kind of respect from a person like him?
Yeah, that means a lot to hear that. I've spent a decent amount of time around Buck. Unfortunately, most of my time there was in the minor leagues. I would have loved to play for him a little bit more, but that means a lot to me. That's extremely motivating to hear you say that right now. Just to pride myself on showing up and being a certain person every day, and some days it's easier than others, but to be on the back end of a relationship with somebody, and especially somebody like Buck Showalter and the respect he has in the game, to hear him say that about me is an honor. It's important, and it's extremely, extremely motivating.
And then finally, a guy you're playing for on the major league level is Torey Lovello. I used to love interviewing Torey. I hate to date me, Christian, but I interviewed him quite a bit when he played. I loved him as a player. He's great to talk to as a manager. What's he like to play for?
Oh, it's great. For me, working through my first full season at this level, it's absolutely ideal. He's a big advocate on trust your gut, trust your instincts. He's had mound visits this year where he tells us, hey, I have a feeling this is going to happen, but I want you guys to trust what you think you can do. If you can turn two. If you want to get one, do it. I trust what you guys have. You're out here for a reason. And in the moment when you hear little things like that, it really settles you down and calms you down. And in a game that's so difficult, sometimes trusting your gut is the edge that you need to be better.
Diamondbacks first baseman Christian Walker, our guest. Arizona's 3.5 games out of a wild card spot in the NL. Another big one tonight at Cincinnati, and they have played great, great baseball over the past month and a half or so. Christian, really nice to have you on the show. That's a great job, great conversation, and I appreciate you. Thanks so much.
Oh, thanks, Jim. I appreciate you having me on, man.
Good night now!